The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I'm thinking like, oh, wow, what am I going to wear for next week? Maybe we all have forgotten about all this week before then. So, in the teachings of the Buddha, all these years ago, he talked about two powers. So what is power? Think about this in a number of different ways. But I think in the way that the Buddha was talking about, in the way that I'm interpreting it, it's about the ability to do something, like the power to act or to move, you know, to have some capacity. Compared to when we describe something, like, wow, that was powerful, it means that like it kind of touched us or that we're moved or something, that it had the capacity to have an effect on us. Sometimes power can have a little bit of a negative connotations to it, but tonight I want to focus on the positive, the feeling that we talked about two powers, two things that can help us move in a direction that we would like. So what are these powers? The first is the power of reflection, and the second is the power of cultivation. So I'd like to talk a little bit about these. So maybe it's just a meditation practice, spiritual practice, practice of anything, learning to play the piano, learning to drive, learning anything that we might want to do. It's, well, if we have a compelling vision of why we want to do something, that really affects the way that we show up and do it. If we have an idea of there's a reason for doing something, rather than there's no reason at all, we were just told to do this, or we can't help ourselves, or whatever reason it might be. So what you're doing has a little bit more impact if it's connected to a vision, an idea, or something about the future, something that's meaningful for us in the future. So we could ask ourselves, as part of our spiritual practice, as part of our meditation practice, what do you want to experience more of? What do you want to know or understand better? What do you want to perhaps penetrate more deeply? Or what do you want to open yourself up to? What do you want to touch more intimately? So you can see these words, they speak to something that's like an aspiration we might have, or something deep within us that might inspire us, or might be an aspiration. There's a story that's told sometimes by John Maxwell, and as the story is of a person who comes across three bricklayers who are busy laying bricks. And this person asks the first bricklayer, "What are you doing?" And the bricklayer says, "I'm laying bricks." Okay. So then the passerby goes to the second bricklayer and says, "What are you doing?" And the second bricklayer says, "I'm putting up a wall." Okay. So then this person asks the third bricklayer and asks, "What are you doing?" And the third person says, "I'm building a cathedral." Right? All three of them are putting these square, rectangular objects, bricks, with mortar. I've never laid a wall or anything, but I imagine this is how it's done, right? All of them are like doing maybe the same activity. Maybe they showed up at the exact same time. Maybe they even worked together as a team. But the first person who's just laying bricks, maybe he just feels like, oh, this is just a task I'm supposed to do, and I'm just going to get it completed. Maybe the second person who has this idea, I'm building a wall, like is motivated by a sense of completion. I'm not doing this just to do it. I'm doing this to create something, to make something. And maybe with this idea, they would add a little extra care here and there just to make sure that the wall is steady and straight and going to connect to the other walls and whatever other requirements there are for building walls. But then the third person who says that they're going to build a cathedral, is they're connected to this desire, this wish to create a fashion, to participate in a structure that enhances a sense of heartfeltness. In the case of a cathedral, maybe worship or some religious services, something that was more than just going through the motions, something that kind of maybe brings all aspects of themselves. And then maybe they had a sense that each brick that was laid down was connected to this greater vision, this greater aspiration. And maybe this person had a sense that they would do whatever was needed to help make this cathedral be something that would be a place of whatever cathedrals are. What are the cathedrals? They're filled with, maybe there's a sense of awe inside of them. Maybe there's a sense of beauty. Maybe there's a sense of safety. So this third bricklayer maybe has a different relationship to their activities, and maybe is more willing to take the extra effort, the extra attention, the extra care to have it turn out a particular way. So I don't have to tell you all that meditation practice, sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes if we have a commitment or a desire or wish, aspiration to have a regular meditation practice, sometimes maybe it feels like laying bricks. Just one breath and then the next breath, one sound and then the next sound. But if we have a compelling vision of why we're doing this, if we reflect on why we're doing this practice, what motivates us, then it can help motivate us to show up and get to the cushion or do the mindfulness in daily life. As consistency, of course, is like such an important part of our practice, and maybe being sometimes reflecting on why we're wanting to do this can help motivate us most times when we don't feel like we want to or feels bothersome or difficult. So it's helpful to periodically reflect. What do we want from our meditation practice? What brought us to the meditation? So not only does doing some reflection about why we're meditating can help motivate us and maybe add a little extra juice to our meditation practice, it also supports the direction of our efforts. If we have a reason to practice, then that can help us navigate what happens in our practice. The means and the goal are intimately, integrally tied in meditation practice. If you want to find more peace, then you can meditate as best you can with a way that finds peace, is oriented towards peace, that brings in peace. If you want to find freedom, relaxation, ease, you can use it as a way to find our way with our practice. You listen to one teacher and a teacher will say, you should do this. You listen to another teacher and they'll say, you should do that. But maybe your experience is completely different. That doesn't really jive with what neither of the teachers are saying. So how can you find your way when maybe you haven't had a teacher tell you anything? Or maybe you read so many different Dharma books. There's like so many different things out there. It's a little bit overwhelming and confusing. So if you can connect you with what's meaningful for you, that can help guide your practice. If you're looking for more freedom, then maybe you would be more willing to be with the difficulty, to be with the restlessness and this feeling like, oh my gosh, the last thing I want to do is sit here and meditate. I'm going to jump up and run out of here as soon as I can. But then there may be a certain wisdom, a certain intuition that recognizes, okay, well, that's not where the place freedom is. Maybe there's freedom from this meditation session, but being able to be to have some steadiness, even though the mind is throwing up these ideas or perhaps the body is complaining, but to be able to have some spaciousness and steadiness and some freedom in order to, instead of just react, you can say, okay, what's the wise thing to do here? What's the best thing to do here? Is this an opportunity for me to practice with difficulty so that I can find more freedom? Or maybe your body is telling you in a way that this, what you're doing is harmful, and it is wise to shift your posture or to get up and move. You can see where this would be really different than if the reason why you're meditating is to find some relaxation. If you're meditating for relaxation and you're finding yourself really, really restless, maybe you would just get up and say, okay, well, I guess relaxation isn't happening. I'll do something else. So in this way, reflecting on why we practice can help direct our efforts. When it's unclear what to do, when we have conflicting instructions, when we have new experiences that we haven't had before in meditation. Having a little bit of clarity of our aspiration or the direction we're going can help provide some guidance. But then this brings to mind these two different ideas. That is, there can be these two polarities, two ends of a spectrum maybe, of one where, okay, I have this goal, and I'm going to make this happen. And this other one is, I'm just going to allow things to unfold. I'm going to do, I'm going to be. We hear both of these messages in kind of in Dharma practice, and especially with meditation practice too. And I would say this is the art of practice. This is kind of the art of meditation, is to be able to find this balance between having an aspiration and orienting that way. And recognizing that what we can do is create the conditions in which our practice can unfold, might unfold in a particular direction. But let's face it, we can't control everything, right? Even as much as we might try and think and wish that we can. So there's also can be this, sometimes there's this message that we should just be, and that somehow that's like just to be spiritual is to just be with whatever is. And I know that I have certainly sat up here and done some of these teachings too. Part of that is about allowing what's already here to be here. And also this idea of being is an antidote to this idea of so much of wanting to manufacture, create, manipulate, make things happen. So we have these two different ideas, this way of being, allowing more not doing, non-doing, then this idea of some doing and there's a goal and to head a particular direction. And all of us will have to find our way with every single meditation practice, maybe with everything that unfolds in our life, this mixture, which way to lean, maybe what's arising requires us to lean one way, and maybe what's needed is to lean another way. But we can reflect on this as well. We can reflect on what is our relationship to this idea of between doing and not doing. Do we have a preference? Are we a person that likes to just do, do, do? Are we a person that likes to just more let go and relax and maybe with a certain, that dance slip into some complacency or, well, I showed up, that should be good enough. It can be really helpful to also reflect on what is our biases? What is our inclination in terms of, if I'm going to use these different ends of a spectrum, doing and being? What are our assumptions about the value, about the role of being and doing? In anything, in meditation practice, in a spiritual practice, in our lives in general. Do we feel like that we have to go out there and do, 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 make, make, make? And there isn't any room for just being? Or do we feel like maybe there's two distinct things, that there's our life where we're doing a lot of doing, but then the spiritual practice, we're just being? And so maybe we can keep both options open. Keeping both options open, and instead have this attitude that both are needed, and a recognition that it is a spectrum. It isn't like all just doing and all just being, and there's some gradations in the middle, and maybe there's a little bit of doing, kind of like with a scooter or a skateboard that you kick, and then maybe you can glide with a little bit with that. So that's something else we can reflect on. We can also reflect on, and this is what's in that sutta, that where the Buddha talks about there's these two powers and the powers of reflection. It was that my interpretation is what I just said. Now here's what the Buddha said. He said to reflect on the consequences of your actions. Makes perfect sense for me to think about this, that in a number of ways that we can think about this, also I can start here, that no matter what our aspiration is, no matter what our desire, our wish, our intention for our meditation practice, it's just wise to be aware of the consequences of our actions. And then, more specifically, the Buddha in the sutta talks about to reflect on whether it causes harm. Whether your actions causes harm to yourself, causes harm to others, or to both yourself and others, or neither. You, neither others, or neither both and you. Something like that. Doesn't matter what our aspirations are, kind of a key core teaching is to not cause harm. Meditation practice is not about causing harm. A spiritual practice is not about causing harm. Even though there may be these subtle forms of causing harm if we have this self-flagellation, like, ah, I can't do this, and I'm not sure why, look, everybody else can do this. I'm not sure why I'm here, or this is hard, something wrong with me, everybody else, or I don't know what sometimes goes on in people's minds. That's not helpful. We may think it's helpful. It's not helpful. Can you have a little bit of kindness and compassion for yourself? When we're learning something new, it takes effort. It takes not being an expert in the beginning. It takes time, and it takes some care. And then, of course, to reflect on, are we harming others? So just to be aware, you know, this is not all just about me and mine and what I'm doing and what I'm not doing. But just to reflect also on what are the consequences of whether it's our meditation practice that we're screaming at the kids, shut up, I'm going to meditate. Hopefully that's not happening. Whatever it might be. And then, of course, not only our meditation practice, but all of our actions, all of the things that we say, and all of the things that we think. Can we reflect on the consequences of that? And the Buddha goes on, we reflect on this before we do things, actions, speech, thinking. While we're doing things, action, speech, and thinking, and after. And then, of course, if we discover that we're doing harm, to stop doing it. This is a core, kind of like a basic teaching, is to reflect on this. So no matter what our reason is for practicing, to keep this in mind. This can be really helpful with speech. I know sometimes that we might start saying and wanting to be complaining. And then we might discover, oh yeah, I've just learned that the more that I complain, the worse things get. I kind of just work myself up into a lather about things if the more complaining I'm doing. So maybe we're talking to a good friend and there can be this... sometimes this happens, this bonding through mutual outrage, right? And can you believe this person did X? Yeah, and then they did Y, and then, oh my gosh, and then there was Z. And before you know it, right, everybody's kind of like losing their freedom, losing their balance, losing their equanimity. I'm not saying that we can't talk with our friends. I'm saying just to notice when we cause harm. And what things are helpful and what things are harmful. So the first power is reflection. Reflect on why we're practicing. Reflect on the consequences of our actions. Whether those actions are body, speech, or mind. And then the second power is the power of cultivation. Cultivation is, in fact, I mean, we could say so much of the Buddhist teachings, right, are about cultivation. He was interested on suffering, right, in the end of suffering, for people to be able to understand difficulties, stress, dissatisfaction, unease, and how to end it. And his prescription was to cultivate all kinds of things. But we can think that there are a number of parallels between cultivating our minds, cultivating our spiritual practice, and cultivating the earth so that, you know, we can plant something. In some ways, it's about... When you're cultivating habits, whether these are habits that you intend to cultivate or not, we tend to give habits the fuel that they need to kind of like take root and flower. And often that's done by just repeating things and doing things again and again until they become a habit. In the same way with things that we plant, right, we give them the fuel that they need, whether that might be water or sunlight or fertilizer or the right type of earth or ground. But just like with plants, we plant a seed, but that's not sufficient, right? The plant, the seed needs to be in the right soil, needs to have the right amount of water, the right amount of light. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. So in the same way, cultivation practice is not only about planting the seed, but how do we provide the right soil? How do we provide the right water and sunlight, the fuel, that things can kind of blossom and flower in a way that we would like them, that we intend for them to blossom and flower? And again, we come back to this idea that nothing is completely under our control. Again, this is just about creating the conditions as best we can. So cultivation is a big part about just creating the conditions as opposed to making things happen, forcing things to happen. And depending on what we value, what's important to us, what's meaningful for us, what is aspirational for us, we will cultivate different things. In some ways, you can see what we value by what we've cultivated. If we have certain habits, often we can see that, okay, a common one is, you know, we value comfort. There's nothing wrong with comfort. I myself was adjusting this cushion here so I could help my knee out a little bit. But how much do we orient our whole entire lives around, I'm just trying to make sure that we're comfortable, 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 and never uncomfortable? It's not as much freedom there. But if we can tolerate a little bit of discomfort, find that our capacity to be with what's arising and to be with a whole multitude of situations grows. So as I mentioned, the Buddha encouraged us to cultivate ethical actions, to be sensitive, to notice, to reflect on what causes harm, both for ourselves and to others. This underlies all the other teachings, not causing harm, not hurting. Often I find that when I'm talking to people about their meditation practice, there's often this quiet little voice that people sometimes don't hear, where they are have this, they're taking on the meditation practice as one more way to beat themselves up in some kind of way. Like, oh, can't do this either. Just offering this is just a little something for you to reflect on and just to notice if this is in your practice. And if it is, can you just allow it to be there? There's no reason to try to push away the pushing away. There's no reason to have be aversive to the aversion. But the Buddha also encouraged us to cultivate a steady mind, a mind that can see clearly, a mind that can understand things, a mind that can see the consequences of what we're doing. I think we all have this experience of when we're scattered, we just don't notice things. I've noticed that for me recently, more and more, like the more meditation practice I have, the more difficult it is for me to like have the music playing and somebody talking to me and like other things happening. Like, oh, this is just like too much. I just feel this unitasking is so much easier. I can have some clarity in my thoughts and some clarity about what I'm doing. This means I have a little bit less freedom in restaurants that have loud music. Like, oh, I can't eat and talk and have music at the same time. I'm sorry. So, of course, there's a few ways in which we can cultivate a steady mind. And one is with mindfulness practice, which can help us to just notice distractions and sometimes just bringing our attention to the distractions is a way in which we're orienting our mind and having it be a little bit more, less scattered, let's say that. It's having it be more present with what's actually happening. And of course, concentration practice is a way that also steadies the mind and has some collectedness and some calmness and some steadiness. And then, as I mentioned earlier, of course, the Buddha didn't teach not only about acting in an ethical way, nor did he only teach about developing the mind, cultivating the mind, but also he offered some particular practices to help support awakening, to help support enlightenment. I'm not going to go through all of these today. I'm just going to mention them. Some of you will be familiar with these. These have a kind of a self-describing name, the seven factors of awakening. Seven practices to support enlightenment. Seven orientations to support awakening, liberation, freedom. So this group of seven is often divided into three, and the first set of three has three elements, and it's for calming factors, things to kind of that help if there's a lot of energy or agitation or excitation. Then there's three ways to not only to calm ourselves, but that will just kind of calm or bring us steadiness, let's say. And then there are three that are more energizing, kind of like bring energy up. And then there's one that is in its own category, and that one is mindfulness. And mindfulness is a way that can help us to, of course, cultivating mindfulness, as I said, helps us to steady the mind, but it also helps us to see, oh, what's needed? Do we need a little bit more energy, energizing, enervation, liveliness, or do we need a little bit more calm? So mindfulness is needed to kind of help with the other two categories. So the energizing factors are investigation, energy itself, and joy. We can cultivate joy. We can cultivate energy. We can cultivate investigation. And we can cultivate mindfulness too. And then the three calming or tranquilizing or soothing maybe factors are tranquility, concentration, and wisdom. So we can cultivate tranquility, cultivate concentration, and cultivate wisdom. So these seven factors of awakening. So the Buddha said there are these two powers. The power of reflection, which maybe is something that we don't do inside our meditation period. Maybe it's something that we do outside. We think about what is important. Why do I have a meditation practice? What is it? Why do I have a spiritual practice? Or maybe it is something that you do, as I did like in the guided meditation, you kind of just drop in this query. Without making it really complicated. It's not as helpful if it's really complicated, if you can have it in a way that has some ease about it. So with reflection, if we have some reflecting on why we practice, that can help motivate us, can help provide some direction. And it can also be helpful to reflect on the consequences of our actions, which of course, right, is related to helping us whether we're going to go in one particular direction or not. But even independent of which direction we're going, to reflect on whether we're causing harm. And I'm throwing in there, and even the quiet, subtle ways that we are not so kind to ourselves. Just to notice that. You don't have to be unkind to yourself because you're unkind to yourself. Just notice. And then cultivation is the second power. We can think of also the word development or practice or creating or supporting habits or inclinations of the mind. And to do this in a way that supports the direction we want to go, including having a steady mind so that we can see clearly and understand. And if liberation, awakening, enlightenment is part of the reason or the only reason why we practice, then the seven factors of awakening, mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and wisdom, can cultivate all these practices. So maybe with that, I'll stop here and open it up and see if there are some comments or questions.
When you were mentioning the three brick walls, and I thought, well, the one who's building a cathedral perhaps is building something for others to enjoy, isn't the right word, and to see themselves, to see the connection of themselves to all beings. I'll just say it that way.
Nice.
And Ajahn Brahm also tells a story about a brick wall where he builds this wall, and it's, you know, a big wall, but there's two bricks that are off, and he just concentrates on those two bricks. And one time a man comes and says, oh, what a beautiful wall. And he goes, yeah, but look at these two bricks. He said, I'm looking at 998 good bricks. And so he challenges us to how we see things. You know, do we just look at, you know, the two ill-fitting bricks or whatever, however you want to describe them?
So, nice.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate this very much about a cathedral is for others. Yeah, that's a great point. I neglected to say that. Thank you.
I guess my question is really sort of any thoughts or guidance on sort of keeping balance in this day and age when there are so many forces sort of at work that kind of throw you off balance every day. And I think a lot of people really find it really challenging.
Yeah. Wow, that's right. That's a big question. I'm trying to think where to start. Are you ready for another 45-minute Dharma talk? Yeah. So here's a few things, and it doesn't usually this type of an answer is not satisfactory. But I'm going to start here. To start where it's easy. To start finding balance on just those little areas where we find ourselves getting maybe a little irritated and irked or something and losing our way a little bit. But then we can find our way back. To build our capacity, to build our capability to be with even small things that are difficult. This is such to cultivate is to... Maybe you like a brick wall, maybe you just start with simple ones and you start with creating a foundation. And so having experience with having greater capacity with practicing with traffic. Those of us that live in the Bay Area, right, have this as a real issue. And for some of us, or for some people, you know, it's really bothersome. So maybe we just start with something like traffic. We can't control the traffic. We can notice when we're sitting in our cars and we're getting anxious and thinking unkind thoughts. Maybe we can have a practice, whatever works, we can, if we have a loving kindness practice, we can maybe work on that. If we can include something bigger, like, okay, yes, I'm having, I'm stuck here in traffic, or I can't find a parking spot, or whatever it might be, but to kind of like expand our awareness to, and I'm also sitting here in this chair and it's comfortable enough. I also had a nice lunch today. I also will eventually get to where I'm going and it'll be okay, or whatever it might be. So we can bring in an antidote practice, like loving kindness, if we have familiarity with that. We can expand our awareness to remind ourselves that other things are happening at the exact same time, different sensations sitting there at the driver's seat, hands on the steering wheel. Expand our awareness to like bring in a memory of other things. That's one way. Third way is to zoom in and to say, okay, just right now I can feel the steering wheel in my hands. I can feel the pressure of the seat on my body. So all three of these ways kind of help us to stop from like kind of like collapsing around the uncomfortable situation, what's making us, what's pushing a button in some way. And so just this way, whichever way feels accessible or appropriate at that time, and to start where it's easy, and just have this idea of like, okay, maybe even to tune into that feeling of, oh yeah, I'm collapsed. This is like I have a little bit of an obsessive quality about this, that I can't let go of this thing and it's eating me up inside. And so those will take some time. So start with something that's, you can just notice there's a little bit of a collapsation around. I'm collapsing with my shoulders and my kind of closing my chest when I do this. Sometimes it's helpful to do this physically and do something to bring a little bit more spaciousness. I mean, we start where we are. We start where we are and start where it's easy. Otherwise, if we go where it's too difficult, then often there's all kinds of things that will thwart our efforts, that will, it'll just be difficult and it will be easy to get thrown off balance with the effort to be on balance. Was that helpful?
Yeah, when I sort of telescope, well, how would I say it? When I look at things in a microcosm, yes. But I still think that, you know, it's just a scary world right now. And it's, I guess in my own practice, what I try to do is kind of tune in and then tune it out. You know, sort of really kind of calibrate how much to pay attention, honestly.
Yeah. There's a real message that kind of happens just because information is available 24/7.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that we should be swimming in it 24/7, right? We have to take care of ourselves and take care of, you know, those around us too. Yeah. Thank you.
I really liked your question. That was really good. And your answer was satisfying for me.
I think your microphone is it off?
Good lights on. I'm just not speaking loud
enough.
Oh,
there we go.
Yeah, but I thought your question was really good, and I found myself in those positions a lot, still struggling a lot with the balance, but I think one thing that's been working for me is when you're feeling overwhelmed, not to feel like you need to solve it right then. And meditation is certainly the start of something, and it takes time to build up that practice. I think just doing it repeatedly really helps. But with things that are perhaps bigger than us, for me, it's a lot of different things. Politics is one, the economy, security. And I think just to be able to talk with others about it and then meditate, I think that helps a lot.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I wish you all a wonderful evening. And may you be able to incline towards what's inspiring and meaningful for you all. Thank you.